Listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, and this is the Illinois World Labor Hour. Welcome to the November 14th, 2009 edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, brought to you over the air by WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, Illinois, and webcast worldwide at weft.org. And the views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not in any way reflect the views of the station, the manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated. And now here's Tom with acknowledgement of some of our underwriters.
The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the Illinois Education Association Teachers Union and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice. Building coalitions amongst workers, unions, and the community, the Illinois Education Association and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice are proud to support WEFT Community Radio in East Central Illinois. This hour of programming is also brought to you by the listeners of WEFT and by the Brotherhood of Maintenance Way. The Brotherhood of Maintenance Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour. A democratic union, BMWE, celebrates the Voice for Labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that they enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away from home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian style health insurance, and guaranteed year round work. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois.
Okay, I'm your host, Bob Polesny. Filling in this week, I believe Dave Johnson was asked to give a speech or a lecture at the U of I today, so he's doing that. I'm filling in, and I'm here with co-host Tom Thomas, who will have some workers' interest news for us. And later in the show, the Labor Hour Cultural Corner, Tom's brand new poem for this week, first recited live here on the Illinois World Labor Hour, is entitled The Fires of Mars. And I'm here, technical expert and advisor, and this week sitting in as host. And we're on with the show. Tom's got some workers' news for us.
The Graduate Employees Organization, a union affiliated with the American Federation of Teachers, the Illinois Federation of Teachers Local 6300, and the AFL-CIO, has been negotiating with U of I administrators for more than 6 months now, seeking a contract that would set an adequate minimum salary for GEO university employees. Last Monday, the GEO announced the results of a strike authorization vote it had conducted during the prior week. According to GEO spokesman Peter Campbell, 92% of participating GEO members chose to authorize a strike against the U of I Board of Trustees, with their votes taken over the course of 3 days during the week. Campbell said the results of the vote instituted a clear mandate to call a strike at any time. Said Campbell, the strike committee met on Sunday, and there is a strike plan in place. He also said a letter was sent to the administration requesting a meeting for negotiations so as to resolve the situation in that manner, if that was possible. November 17th is the next planned meeting for negotiations. However, in a mass email Monday from the office of Interim Provost Robert Easter, the U of I is expecting the strike to begin on November 16th. We'll just have to wait a couple of days to see what happens. Bob?
Yeah, Tom, I got a story here of a possible strike by workers at Safeway and Fry's in Arizona has been averted. According to a news release, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local 99, Safeway Stores and Kroger Company, the owner of Fry's and Smith's, reached a tentative settlement on a new collective bargaining agreement late Thursday evening. Local 99 will submit the tentative agreement to its Safeway, Fry's, and Smith's members with the union's recommendation that it be approved. The union and the companies have agreed to extend the existing contract pending the outcome of the membership vote. Union spokeswoman Ellen Anrider said no details of the tentative agreement will be released until the union and members have a chance to review the agreement. The union said in a news release early today, there will be no work stoppage and all stores will continue to operate as normal. The previous five-year contract between the union and the companies expired in October of 2008, and employees have worked under a series of extensions, the last of which expired October 31st of this year. Tom?
According to RealtyTrack's monthly foreclosure market report, the number of foreclosures filed in Illinois jumped 56% in October from the previous month. The report said that 19,946 properties in Illinois were subject to a foreclosure filing in October, and that was the highest monthly total for the state since RealtyTrack began issuing its monthly reports in January of 2005. However, there may be a modicum of relief to these numbers. A recently enacted Illinois law, which took effect in April of this year, gives the distressed homeowners an extra grace period to seek counseling to help avoid foreclosure. Once that law took effect, Illinois' foreclosure activity decreased notably before climbing again. According to RealtyTrack figures, Nevada had the highest foreclosure rate in the nation, with one in every 80 housing units receiving foreclosure filings in October. That was followed by California, Florida, Arizona, Idaho, and Illinois. In Illinois, one in every 263 housing units received foreclosure filings in October. Bob?
Yeah, Tom, I was listening to WEFT earlier today, and William and Christy on their Rock Geek FM show this morning, where their theme was coffee. So I'm going to do a story here about tea. This is occurring in India, and it's Tetley's Tea is starving Indian tea workers into submission. And this is Tata, the transnational Indian conglomerate whose Tetley group makes the world's famous Tetley teas, has taken 6,500 people hostage through hunger. The hostages are nearly 1,000 tea plantation workers and their families on the Nowhera Nadi tea estate in West Bengal, India. Permanently living on the edge of hunger, the workers and their dependents are being pushed to the edge of starvation to an extended lockout, which has deprived them of wages for all but 2 days since the beginning of August. The goal of this collective punishment is to starve the workers into renouncing their elementary human rights, including the right to protest extreme abuse and exploitation. The hostage-taking began with the first lockout on August 10th, when workers protested the abusive treatment of a 22-year-old tea garden worker who was denied maternity leave and forced to continue work as a tea plucker despite being 8 months pregnant. On August 9th, Mrs. Ardi Oran collapsed in the field and was brought to the hospital on a tractor normally used for garbage after the medical officer refused to make an ambulance available. Her treatment was inadequate, and she had to be taken in the same garbage tractor to the local government hospital 1 hour away. As news of her treatment spread, some 500, mostly female, estate workers gathered in protest at the medical facility, demanding sanctions against the medical officer. Local management promised to meet with the workers, but on August 11th, the management, along with the medical officer, left the estate and declared a lockout. On August 27th, an agreement was signed with three trade unions representing some workers on the estate, but not a majority, on reopening the garden. In the agreement, all workers' wages for the lockout period were withheld. The agreement included a clause that a domestic inquiry, an internal company-controlled investigation, would be conducted. The agreement was written in English, a language few, if any, of the workers understand. The garden was reopened the following day, although workers were not informed of the conditions of the reopening. On September 8th, management issued letters of suspension and ordered a domestic inquiry against eight workers. None of the eight workers received a letter of notification. None of the eight had committed any act of violence or were involved in any illegal practice. These eight workers have been targeted because they are active in the garden campaigning for workers' rights. Following, they went on September 10th, a meeting. Management told the workers that suspension letters had been issued in accordance with the August 27th agreement and that opening the garden depended on compliance with that agreement. In other words, agree to the suspensions or you'll be locked out again. Workers requested 6 days to respond to this ultimatum. And this ultimatum was a powerful one. Tea garden wages are just 62.5 Indian rupees per day. That's about $1.35. And tea workers permanently live on the edge of hunger. The loss of wages for even a few weeks can tip them into starvation. Although wielding the weapon of hunger with workers' lives in the balance and the deadline to respond not yet expired, management on September 14th again left the plantation and implemented a lockout. This was the day workers were meant to receive their annual festival bonus amounting to roughly 2 months' wages, so no bonus payments were made. So the story continues. Tata Tea is a powerful global company. Its wholly owned Tetley Tea is one of the world's biggest selling tea brands. And the Nowhera Nutty Tea Estate is owned by the Amalgamated Plantations Private Limited, a company 49.98% owned by Tata Tea. And so anyway, they're trying to starve these workers into submission.
Yeah, $1.45 a day, whatever it was, that's not an 8-hour day either. You got to be sure that they're working 12, 14 hours.
Probably in at least abusive conditions and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Oh, and they take you to the doctor in the garbage truck instead of an ambulance, what
right.
You say.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, the CSX Corporation, the nation's third largest railroad, reported last month that it thinks the worst of the recession is over, but its third quarter earnings fell 23% from the previous year because shipping demand still is weak. CSX, which operates its signature locomotives from Canada to Florida and west to the Mississippi River, said that overall shipping fell 15% from a year ago in the June to September period. The biggest drops were in shipments of coal and cars and construction and consumer goods. And the company warned that demand for coal, one of its biggest segments of product shipped, will remain weak well into the next year. CSX reported that the total volume was not quite as steep as the second quarter, which was possibly signaling the start of an economic recovery in the United States. Rail traffic is seen as an indicator of the economy's direction because such a quantity of everyday goods is shipped on the steel track.
Okay, I've got a story here. Workers at a Ford Motor Company assembly plant in Missouri have said that would authorize a strike as the automaker and the United Auto Workers Union continue talks aimed at resolving disputes over local plant conditions. About 3,500 hourly workers at Ford's Kansas City, Missouri plant began voting on Thursday and are scheduled to conclude the process on Saturday, Ford spokeswoman Evans said. The strike authorization vote passed would give the UW the ability to call a strike at a plant that assembles F-150 pickup trucks and the Ford Escape and Mercury Mariner crossovers. Evans said that it has been more than 20 years since a strike authorization vote has led to a work stoppage. UAW Local 249 is less than 2 weeks after Ford's 41,000 U.S. factory workers overwhelmingly rejected a proposed cost-cutting deal that would have brought its labor costs in line with those of General Motors and Chrysler Group. Opposition to the proposed concessions was particularly fierce at the Kansas City plant, with 92% voting against the deal. The national average was 70% for production workers and 75% for skilled trade workers. And the union local has raised concerns regarding working conditions, workload, and job security. And how about if we go to a quick snippet from Workers Independent News?
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Mark Ayers, chairman of the Union Veterans Council, says that unemployment among veterans now exceeds 25%. The Veterans Council is calling on Congress to quickly extend unemployment benefits and combine that with an effort to strengthen and enforce the Uniformed Services Employment and Reemployment Rights Act. That law protects veterans by allowing them to claim their former jobs when they return from active duty. The Union Veterans Council says that veterans need the assurance of satisfactory employment as they return to civil life. The Union Veterans Council also wants to see state and local job training and employment counseling programs for vets expanded. The council says it's dumbstruck that Congress is considering cutting funding for the Helmets to Hard Hats program, which places veterans in good construction jobs. Arizona's shoppers could see 25,000 grocery workers on the strike lines as early as Friday. Jesse Russell has more.
On Wednesday, workers for Kroger and Safeway supermarkets announced a strike deadline of Friday, 6 p.m. They're asking the two chains to meet demands for salaries and benefits. The two companies have a joint lockout agreement that if workers at one chain walk off the job, the other chain will lock out its workers. Arizona isn't the only place where Safeway is facing down potential strike action. In New Mexico last week, workers at Safeway grocery stores allowed the company to extend a contract until November 14th so negotiations can continue. In that state, the United Food and Commercial Workers have filed a complaint with the National Labor Relations Board, alleging Safeway bargained in bad faith and withheld information regarding plans to acquire temporary workers if a strike occurs. Grocery workers in the Denver area of Colorado have been waiting for authorization from national leadership to call a strike against Safeway. Similar to the situation in Arizona, supermarket chain King Soopers has agreed to lock out workers if Safeway is hit with a strike.
Flight attendants will finally be able to get the same benefits enjoyed by other workers under the Family and Medical Leave Act. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, says it's happy to see Senate approval of the Airline Flight Crew Family and Medical Leave Act. The bipartisan bill makes it possible now for flight crews to get family medical leave. They faced unusual hurdles under the original law that in many cases blocked them from getting leave.
Here is today's economic report. A study to be published in the American Journal of Industrial Medicine found that female hotel workers are 50% more likely to be injured on the job than men. The study suggests the reason is because women overwhelmingly hold jobs as housekeepers. Workers who hold such a position have a 7.9% injury rate. Additionally, the study reports that Hispanic female hotel workers have an injury rate two-thirds higher than white female hotel workers.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
And now, here's Tom with his poem, The Fires of Mars.
An endless war is raging on, as treacherous as war can be. Too many thousands now have died in the hills of a far country. There never was good reason for our military to be there, although our leaders lied to us because they really did not care. How many wars have profited what's called the American dream? How many patriots are dead behind some political scheme? Who will control the world's wealth in minerals and in oil is why our leaders spend our troops on a distant foreign soil. To trade each rifle for a spade and bring our soldiers home to dig the gardens that can feed our land is not a task that is too big. In fact, it would be easier than bombing cities far away and sacrificing our loved ones who each deserve a brighter day. The Korean War carries on, and the one in Vietnam, too. Iraq will never know a day when a peace is honest and true. And now we're in Afghanistan, where the fires of Mars still burn, and we're burying our siblings because someone said it's their turn. just how many politicians who are now in still need to be if they support illegal war that's slowly killing our country. The Fires of Mars was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on November 11, 2009, Veterans Day, and was first recited live on November 14, 2009 on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
Okay, thanks, Tom. I do have a couple quick announcements here. Of course, we are still in our pledge drive, and you can call 359-9338 and pledge, or you can get on the internet at weft.org and pledge that way. I also have a public service announcement here. This is from Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, and they say pickets may be needed to support the GEO on Monday, and you can please reply. It says there is a strong possibility that the GEO will be on strike Monday with pickets at the quad buildings where classes are taught. GEO would like our support in organizing volunteers for picket duty. They have asked for a list of volunteers by Saturday. You can reply with your availability Monday to Friday, days and times, and a phone number where you can best be reached. And they don't have exact hours yet, but they imagine the peak times will be peak times for classes, something like 9 to 3. And that's from Robert Naiman with Just Foreign Policy, www.justforeignpolicy.org.
Yeah, man, I love the GEO.
You went down to Springfield this week with them, didn't you, Bill?
Yeah, I did, man. It was a really good trip. I had a really good time. And I tell you, if our other unions, especially the lazy-ass building trades unions, would get off of their asses and act like these college students do, then we might have a decent country again. But oh, hell no, they just sit there sucking up my dues money. They aren't producing any jobs. I've only worked about 30 days this year. And I am sick to hell. I want that damn Terrence O'Sullivan, who's the president of my union, to go over to the White House and shake some money out of that Barack Obama. Geez, these Democrats, man, they've been letting the Republicans walk over them ever since Ronald Reagan in 1980. And they've let the Republicans destroy this country. The Republicans are out and out traitors. They should all be arrested. All the bankers are traitors. The Wall Streeters are traitors. I've had it, man. I'm about to lose my mind. I was crying this morning.
How about if we go to a little bit of music here with Ann Feeney?
There's an alien life form been creeping round my job site. Oh, they look almost human, but something about them ain't right. They just cross right over a picket line. Pay no attention to a picket sign. They're called scabs. Scabs. The lowest life form spawned in nature's lab. They got no brains. They got no heart. Scabs are tearing our communities apart. They might be reptilian. The blood flows like ice in their veins.
Okay, I believe our call-in guest is calling in here. This is Bob. You're on the air with the Illinois World Labor Hour. Is this our guest?
Yes, it is, Bob. This is Michael J. Wilson.
Michael J. Wilson is the executive director of the Americans for Democratic Action. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And why don't you start off and tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and a little bit about the ADA?
Well, why don't we start with ADA, because ADA is a little older than I am. ADA was started in 1947 when FDR died. Eleanor Roosevelt and Walter Reuther and other notable liberals created the Americans for Democratic Action. The goal was to keep the New Deal alive and to keep fighting for the New Deal goals and aspirations. And so for more than 63 years, ADA has fought for economic justice and social justice and for workers' rights and to you know, make sure that the economy works for everybody.
Excellent, excellent. Hubert Humphrey, was he involved with getting that started back in 1947? Huh?
That's correct. There was a long list of luminaries from that time who helped to form the ADA, and Hubert Humphrey was among them.
Excellent, excellent. And the current issues that you folks are most concerned about, back in 2008 and 2009, obviously, health care and labor relations, workers' rights,
That's exactly right. So we're up to our necks in health care, as is everybody else. We had, had high hopes with the beginning of the Obama administration that we'd be able to make a lot of progressive change in this country, and we're still hopeful. You know, what I always point out to people is that, FDR was elected in 1932, and we didn't actually get the Fair Labor Standards Act creating a minimum wage until 1938, which was in the middle of the second term. So we really take a long-term view on a lot of this work. So we're focused on health care. We're focused on unemployment and trying to create jobs in this country when unemployment is so terribly high. And we're also focused on trying to help enact the Employee Free Choice Act so workers actually have a chance to have a voice at work.
I saw something on your website, and I'll give you the website is adaction.org, correct?
That's correct, adaction.org.
Right. And you folks are advocating a real job creation plan?
That's correct. So we talked about the, what we described as the Great Recession has thrown millions of people out of work all over the country. And the truth is that no one today in any industry or in any set of the workplace is safe from losing their job. So there's a lot of unease. So we're very focused on trying to advocate policies which will try to bring people into the workforce. And among the folks that are most definitely hit not only are older workers but are younger workers. So
we've
talked about the challenge of trying to just create more jobs by we talked about doubling the funding of things what we call the core budget. So you've got the Job Corps, you've got the AmeriCorps, and you've got Peace Corps. These are things that will help young people get into the workforce. So Job Corps is really aimed at folks coming out of high school who aren't going to go to college, who are going to do things to get training and to get skills and to get jobs. And AmeriCorps, obviously, is the public sector Job Corps that is, helping to do the work all around the country, all the public service projects. And Peace Corps is, those are going to be our future ambassadors and people doing foreign affairs. None of these jobs are going to make people wealthy, but they are the beginning of careers, the beginning in the workplace that people can get the skills and the experience and get some income as we move forward here. And the advantage of those programs is that you wouldn't have to create new bureaucracies or new programs. They're existing programs. We just increase the funding. We can do a lot for the young people who are out there looking for work.
Right, right.
What about 53-year-old union construction workers?
Well, I think that's important, too. So we've also advocated for, obviously, the public sector work that needs to be done, the shovel-ready projects. All around this country, there are roads, there are bridges, there's construction that needs to get done. And this country has always benefited from that. We still have public parks that we're benefiting from that were done during the Great Depression when the CC did things.
Right.
So there's work to be done, and for those who have complained about the deficit or the debt, we've always said that the deficit and the debt are immaterial. That given the opportunities that we have to do now, and the best way to get rid of the deficit and the debt are to put people to work so they can pay taxes and help pay that down. And
exactly.
If we do that now, over the long term, the deficit will be able to take care of itself. But if we don't take care of that, and we've got long-term unemployment for a long time, there's no way of fixing this economy.
Well, by the way, my name is Bill Gorell. I'm one of the founders of this program, and I am extremely upset right now.
Okay.
And I am very upset because I'm a member of the labor's union. I've only worked about 30 days since December 12th.
My God.
And I want to know where the only stimulus I'm getting is unemployment.
Right.
An extra $25. And the only you know, I see, and I go out and I see a few projects that have the signs for them for this reinvestment and this and that. Last year was the best year I ever had in my life. I want to know why there aren't people in jail. Well, this, I don't know. I'm just ranting, but I'm about to lose my mind. Okay, well, I would suggest to young people that they move to Europe.
Well, I think, you know, I have to say I share that anger and that frustration. You know, we had a fight here a few weeks ago about extending unemployment benefits, yeah. And we couldn't get the Congress to get it done. I mean, the House had done it, and then the Senate was sitting on this. And you had, I'm going to be frank, we had Republican senators by and large who wanted to do other things first to try to get this done. And at the same time, we know that there were like 7,000 folks a day who were exhausting their benefits. Now you're right, we need to do more about job creation. But in the meantime, there are thousands of people every day who have been unemployed, can't find works in the middle of the Great Recession, and we're telling them, we're going to wait to do your benefits?
Yeah. Those Republicans, I really feel that anybody who calls themselves a Republican now is a traitor to this country. They have shown themselves to be, I think they're criminal.
Well, you know, part of the problem here that I find that people have frustration because things are not moving fast enough, and I feel that way too. But, you know, part of the problem here is the president can't do this alone. And the problems in the Congress, that there are people who have a conscious political strategy to slow things down and to not let things happen because they think that they can benefit in the mid-year elections by making things go in the other direction.
Yeah.
And it's crass politics, and people's lives are on the line.
One of the things the ADA is famous for, I guess, is your tracking of congressional voting records.
That's correct.
Every year you take 20 bills or 20 issues in both the House and the Senate, and you rank congressional members on how much they voted either for or against these things, with like zero being conservative and 100 being liberal.
That's correct.
And I got a little comment from your website there that for 2008 congressional voting records, just it says the House makes progress and the Senate is a bust, which kind of confirms what you were saying earlier, that the House seems to move on some of these issues and you can't get some of these things through the Senate at all.
Well, you know, last year, and of course last year, in 2008, I actually wasn't at ADA, but I knew of ADA and was conscious of what they were doing. In the last session of Congress, the Senate had more filibusters than any time in the Senate's history. Now, you have to think about that in context. I mean,
were these Republican-initiated filibusters?
Do you think so?
Oh, absolutely. So they filibustered everything that the House would do, even though the Democrats had a slim majority. Everything, whether it was the Employee Free Choice Act, whether it was, you know, I mean, you name it, there were so many things, and they figure, we're not going to worry about it. We're not going to do anything. We're going to sit here, and we're going to just stop them. And there were more filibusters than any time in the country's history. Now, you can argue that in 2008, they paid a price for that at the ballot box, because now we have 60, quote-unquote, Democrats in the Senate. Well, my history tells me that if you have 60 Democrats in the Senate, you don't really have 60 Democrats.
Right.
Yeah.
You got Joe Lieberman.
Oh, I was going to bring his name up. Yeah.
Who you can't count on for anything, because he'd much rather see Mr. McCain as president.
Yes.
We got some senators who will do anything to protect themselves as opposed to move the agenda forward. In order to really pass things and bust through filibusters, you really need almost an FDR-like margin. You need 70 Democrats so that you can pick off the ones you don't need.
Right.
And so, you know, the challenges we have, not in order to make change in this country, because change in this country comes slow.
Really?
We need so much. We need health care done right now. We need to change this country's retirement system so that people have real retirement security. I mean, anybody who thinks that their 401k or their pension plan is going to protect them when the economy's like this is fooling themselves. You know, this is not the way this is going to work. We need retirement security.
Right.
We need jobs programs in a way that we haven't needed them since the 1930s. We need so much, and at the same time, it's taken us all this time just to get a House-passed bill in the on health care, not a Senate-passed bill, but a House-passed bill, which frankly doesn't do enough of what we need.
Right, and actually puts limits on abortions.
Oh, it does all kinds of stuff that we don't need. I mean, abortion should not have been an issue in health care. Abortion,
nope.
I mean, as divisive an issue as it is, and we all know it's a divisive issue, it should have been the status quo, and let us move forward and deal with the real health issues that are out there that people are dealing with.
Right.
But instead, people are playing politics.
Yeah, well, one thing that I'm really frustrated about is I just think that the leaders of the American labor movement are worthless. We ought to be having that would be busing people like me to Washington right now to camp out in front of the White House. You know, and I'm sorry, Obama's a Democrat. We need to create a parade for him and the other Democrats to get out in front of, and we're not doing it.
Right. So the one thing we know that President Obama understands is what it means to be an organizer,
yeah,
and how to organize pressure. And so we at ADA believe very strongly that what we have to do is organize the pressure to move the president in the right direction. Because if he only gets pressure from one side, he's only moving in one direction.
Well, yeah, the only people that are doing anything are teabaggers.
Right. And so while I agree with you that we need pressure here in D.C., we also got to have pressure on these folks back in the district. So we regularly tell our folks, you got to call, you got to visit, you got to write, you got to get online. We got to have pressure in people's districts. So there's no reason why members of Congress shouldn't come home and have their schedules filled with the stuff that we want and not the stuff that they plan to do.
That's one of your guys' main themes, right, is grassroots organizing?
That's exactly right. So, you know, one of the advantages of being an organization as old and as well-known as ADA is that, you know, we actually have people in every state of the country. So in every state, from Arizona to Alaska to Arkansas to Maine, you know, there's an ADA person there. So we regularly communicate with them about the things that we're working on, about health care, about unemployment, about the Employee Free Choice Act. So, for example, people can go to our website and actually sign a petition for the Employee Free Choice Act. We've tried to be an ally to the labor movement that's not a labor union, that makes the case about why the Employee Free Choice Act is so important.
Right.
It's not just about unions. It's about the people who aren't in unions. Because when the labor movement is stronger, the economy is stronger, our communities are stronger. You know, one of my jobs in the past, when I was at I was actually working at the Labor Department back in the Clinton administration. Mm-hmm. One of the phone calls we used to get what we call the Debbie and Bobby calls, which are these little simpleton calls we get from congressional staffers, and they have these simple questions about, you know, can somebody get fired for this? Can somebody get fired for that?
Right.
And the truth is, there's a very simple answer. Employers have a right to fire for virtually any reason, with exceptions. They can't say, I'm going to fire you because of your race. They can't say, I'm going to fire you because of your gender. They can't say, I'm going to fire you because you're disabled. All the obvious discrimination things they can't fire you for. And there's one other reason that they can't fire you. If you've got a union contract, you've got protection.
Yeah, well, I tell you.
But that's the thing that people didn't seem to quite understand. So I agree, the labor movement has challenges. But until we have more people in the labor movement that we can actually move and do stuff, the density in the industries is just much too low.
Yeah, I agree with you definitely on the grassroots action, and I'm very disappointed with just the American people.
Yes.
If things were going on like this and say, I mean, in France, people were taking their bosses hostage.
Right.
Right.
People here won't do anything. And if this was Italy, there'd be millions of people out in the streets calling for the heads of the Wall Street bankers.
Right. So I want to, first of all, thank you for letting me come on your radio show on a Saturday and spend some time talking about this. Being having an opportunity to actually talk about this to folks in the middle of Illinois is useful for us, for ADA. I want to help spark this so that people understand what's going on, because being a citizen isn't just a right. You know, there's a responsibility here,
right.
And the responsibility isn't just to vote in every election. It's to have an impact all the time. And every day that we waste, that we don't talk to our elected officials, that we don't let them know what we think, somebody else is getting in their two cents, and so we've got to help spark this. And I think your show is a good example of what we have to do to kind of get that message out.
Yeah, well, my thinking is that voting is a necessary but not a sufficient condition for democracy, and there's a lot more that goes to it, like you were saying.
Right. So the example I tell people is that, for example, if you vote once in every election, or you vote once a year or twice, or every members of Congress cast hundreds of votes.
Yeah.
Hundreds of votes. And if for your one vote, you have to do more than just cast that vote during the primary and during the general election. You've got to be on them. You have to talk to them. You have to communicate to them. Because, you know, Goldman Sachs is lobbyists up here, and they can afford to do all kinds of stuff. And,
they can hand out a lot more money than we can.
Well, I think Goldman Sachs is the government now. And that is one thing I've been real disappointed with the Obama administration, is that they have hired the people who destroyed everything to supposedly fix it.
Right. So, you know, that's one of the reasons we've been so adamant about having a public works jobs program. Instead of paying these companies to fix the economy, let's bypass them and go directly to people and hire folks
to the workers
to do the work that needs to get done. You know, because we know what happens if we feed the upper class about what's going to come out at the other end.
So
our goal has got to get directly to folks about direct hiring. And so one of the things the Obama administration is talking about is doing a jobs summit pretty soon. So I think that's a good move in terms of moving in the right direction and trying to put the focus on the right thing. So we're going to be trying to communicate with them about what needs to come out of such a summit. And I think we're pretty clear about what we need to do. We need to hire some people.
Well, I think that summit should have happened about 6 months ago. And I don't want to just hear about Obama talking about things. You know, I'm very, very frustrated. Of course, I didn't expect that much anyway out of the Democrats, because they've laid down since 1980.
Well, I think we've got a lot of work to do, and I understand your frustration, and I'm anxious about this too, but I'm also trying to take a long-term view of this. We've got to get as much done as quickly as we can, but it's not all going to get done in the first 9 months. And so we're adamant about pushing forward. We have to take a long-term view because, you know, how long did it take us to get Medicare?
Well, yeah, but I mean, how long am I going to be able to make it without going bankrupt and losing my house and everything I own?
Nope, you're right.
I mean, that's my long-term view, and it's very depressing.
Yep. No, you're right. I think we have to keep the pressure on. There's no two ways about it.
You created subgroup of the ADA back in like 2004, Working Families Win.
Right.
And you, your goal with that was to organize voters in small towns across the country. Is that correct?
That's correct. So Working Families Win was a project that was originally done by a former member of Congress out of Indiana, Jim Johns. Jim was a great guy, and he had a vision about how to build this around the country. He had, you know, got elected out as a small town kind of guy, turned a Republican district into a Democratic district, and, you know, survived there for a long time. But he had a notion that we could kind of build this and see this around the country. So our plans, as we have organizers in several states right now, are to build this over the course of the next year. Our hope is that we actually have organizers in 60 communities around the country. Mm. We'll be talking to workers, to neighbors, to working families about issues like the economy, like jobs, like health care, like trade, to kind of counter the general Fox News inspired version about what's going on, and actually talk to people in local communities and to try to get them educated on these issues so they can actually make a difference.
Yeah, I'm really interested in that because I am from real small towns, and I find the people in those towns to be horrendously ignorant of many political things.
So one of the ways I describe it is that what ADA is working to do through Working Families Win is to have have communication on issues the way unions try to communicate on issues to their members, but not just around an election, but around all year long, and not to make it about candidates, but to make it about issues, and to have direct communication with them about those things on a continuing basis, so that you can counter some of this. If people get information that's credible and that makes sense to them, they can make good decisions.
Yeah, that sounds like a really good idea.
I like the idea, yeah. Make it on issues and not on candidates so much. It shouldn't be a popularity contest.
No.
We shouldn't keep putting the same people in there for 8 terms, you know.
I do have to say, Illinois, Dick Durbin, I think he's a pretty good senator. I was really amazed at what he said, was it a few weeks ago, about how Congress is pretty much owned by the banks.
Right. I think if I saw it correctly, Dick Durbin got 100% rating from you folks last year.
Well, he probably did. Dick Durbin has been a stand-up guy, and we've been really glad not only that he's in the Senate, but that he's in the leadership.
Right.
You know, he's the guy who can help count votes and count noses and kind of influence things that are going through. It's not just about, you know, the issues that we're covering, the issues that they're going to vote on, but we got to make sure that they get the right kind of issues to the floor to vote on in the first place. And so he's been tremendously helpful in a lot of issues. He was really pressing on the unemployment extension inside the Senate caucus to try to get that done. And he's been a big pusher on health care, not just to move health care forward, but to make sure we have as strong and as robust a public option as possible. And that's going to be a real challenge in the Senate.
Yeah, and in the House, I'm really impressed with Jan Schakowsky. And not so much with Tim Johnson, but Jan Schakowsky is great.
Well, I have to be honest. Jan and I go way back. I used to live in Chicago, and I worked for Jan a long time ago. So I'd like to think I learned a little bit from Jan. Jan is very smart. She's very committed. She's traveled all around the state of Illinois in her time.
Mm-hmm.
So she brings a perspective that's not just about Evanston, Illinois, or suburban Chicago, but really kind of impacts folks all around. And I think she's a great advocate in the House, and she's a person who we looked to talk to other members to kind of move them in the right direction.
She was prominent in the Republic Windows and Doors issue up in Chicago last fall, correct?
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. You know, if you are organizing a union and you're trying to organize folks, I think one of the things we all know is how difficult it is to organize today. But you have to bring public pressure on some of these employers as well. And it helps to have elected officials who are willing to do the right thing. It helps to have advocacy groups and allies like Americans for Democratic Action. And we're always willing to say to employers, you know, you need to do the right thing, to bring public pressure to them so that people can have a voice and can get these things done.
We've just got a few minutes left, and I want to make sure that our listeners know how to find out more about Americans for Democratic Action, perhaps become involved as one of these small-town organizers.
Well, so here's what you would do. I mean, we have a website where we get communications all the time, adaction.org. We have a fan page on Facebook. We may be an old-line organization, but we're trying very hard to use the modern technology. We regularly post information. In fact, we posted on our Facebook page yesterday that I was going to be on this radio station today. So to the extent that there are folks around Illinois who follow our fan page, they got to actually see that information. The best way is to communicate through us through our webpage, adaction.org. Our person who runs our Working Families Win program is looking for organizers, you know, throughout the country in places that we've targeted for a variety of different reasons, because we're looking at places that we can actually have an impact. We'd be glad to hear folks who want to reach out to us on that basis.
Excellent.
ADAction.org, then.
ADAction.org. Or if you do a search and you put in for Americans for Democratic Action, you'll find us. What I would suggest you don't put in ADA, because you might get the American Dental Association.
Yeah, they get enough of my money anyway.
Or Americans for Disabilities Act, which
right.
is us, but which is an important law, which we support, of course.
I've made a lot of money off of that.
Yeah. Americans for Democratic Action is easy to find, and we're always looking for folks to be supportive and to help us carry out our mission.
Well, thank you very much. Michael J. Wilson is the National Director of Americans for Democratic Action, and we want to thank you very much for coming on the program today.
Thank you. I'm glad to do it and look forward to trying to do it again sometime.
Do you know Terrence O'Sullivan?
I do know Mr. O'Sullivan, President of the Laborers International Union.
Yes, I'm somewhat disappointed with him, but we'll let it go.
Okay.
Michael, thank you very much again for being on the program. We really enjoyed it.
Thank you, and keep up the good work, guys.
Okay, excellent. You too, Michael.
Thank you. And how about if we go do a little bit of music here, so a little more from Ann Feeney. Feeney, and we want national health care now. And I have a little bit of a quick news story here about Obama announces this White House job summit. And this is from Thursday. This morning, President Obama announced he will invite labor leaders, business executives, small business owners, economists, and other financial experts to a special White House summit on jobs next month. Obama says the summit will explore ways to slow the loss of jobs and quicken the pace of job creation at a time when the nation's jobless rate is 10.2%, its highest point since 1983. As Obama said, we have an obligation to consider every additional responsible step that we can to encourage and accelerate job creation in this country. And just this week, the AFL-CIO Executive Council met in Washington, D.C. to outline a national jobs creation strategy that AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka will announce Tuesday at a special Economic Policy Institute Jobs and Economy panel and seminar.
Okay, folks, by the way, I just wanted to mention that I watched a YouTube video this morning of Ann Feeney singing and playing to a group of almost probably 99% women workers in Pekin, Illinois, who are members of Laborers Local 231 there in Pekin. They work at a place called PAL Health, and they make medical equipment. And it was very inspiring to see that, and I'm really glad that Ann did that, and I'm sorry that we didn't know about it sooner.
Yes.
But by the way, folks, if you want to search for Bill Gorell on YouTube, or not YouTube, but Facebook, and send me a friend request, and because that is on my homepage right now.
Okay, so stay tuned to next program at the top of the hour. Kiwi will be in with Close to the Fire.
And by the way, my friend Sharon in Bloomington sent me that link to Ann.
Thanks, Bill.